Okay, so we are holding on Kuf Tes Vav Amud Beis, four lines from the bottom. It says, Amashmur Lechem Oni Ksiv. Now the Pasuk calls matzah Lechem Oni, which besides the simple meaning that it means poor man's bread, it means Lechem She'onin Olav Dvarim. It means bread over which we oinim, over which we declare many things. Which in other words, we have to have we say the Seder. We say the whole Maggid with the matzah in front of us, and this is why during most of Maggid we have the matzah uncovered in order that oinin olav dvarim habi. We're declaring many things over that matzah. Davar acha, another explanation, lechem oini is oni ksiv. The word is pronounced oini, which means poverty or affliction, but it's written without the vav in the pasuk, so we can read it as if it said the word oni, which means a poor person. Ma oni shadav. Now, just like a poor person only has half a loaf, a poor person can't even necessarily afford a full loaf of bread, or they'll only eat a half a loaf at a time because they need to save for the next time because they don't know if they're going to have. Afkan b'prusa, the same way over here, you have to have a half a matzah. Now, here comes a machlokas rishonim. We know we make two brachas over the matzah. We make hamotzi and alachilas matzah. Which one is over which matzah? And therefore, which one do we now eat from after we say hamotzi and alachilas matzah? Rashi and the Rashbam explain over here that you use the broken one is for alachilas matzah. Then you have two whole ones because of hamotzi. Because after all, every Shabbos and Yom Tov you have to have lechem mishnah. Pesach is no different. So therefore, you have two whole ones for hamotzi, and then you have the broken one for alachilas matzah. Rabbi Hanan over here says maybe the other way around. Maybe what it is that he says at the bottom of the previous amud what are you saying hamotzi on? So mistabra, he says, it's more logical aprusa that it's going on the broken one. So therefore, and Tosfos also mentions that. Tosfos starts by saying that it seems that hamotzi you're saying on the prusa. So first of all, you do have an opinion. I mentioned the other day that the Rambam holds that you only need two matzahs, because the Rambam holds that unlike on a regular Shabbos and Yom Tov, where you need lechem mishnah, you need two complete loaves, but over here, because of this davka shaloni b'prusa, you need only one and a half. So according to the Rambam, to begin with, you need only two matzahs, and it's brought that the Vilna Gaon used to do it that way. He would have only two matzahs by his Seder plate, and he would break one. So for Moitzi Matzah, he would have only two matzahs over there, and then he would he'd have only two matzahs over there. One and a half. In other words, yeah. But in other words, not three as we have them. But anyway, Tosfos goes on to discuss that. Because you have this machlokas between Rashi and the Rashbam on the one hand, and Rabbeinu Hanano on the other hand, which one you're saying hamotzi on? Therefore, what we do is we do both. This is the reason why we do as follows. We know when we say hamotzi, we hold all three matzahs. That's in order to fulfill what Rashi and the Rashbam are saying, that we should be having two whole matzahs. So we're holding the top and the middle one. Then when it comes to alachilas matzah, we let go of the bottom one and we hold only the top two, because alachilas matzah is more primarily on the prusa or one of the shleimas. We don't need both shleimas for alachilas matzah. And then what we do is we eat a kezias from each one of them, the top and the middle one, because we're not sure which one, the bracha hamotzi and the bracha alachilas matzah, were primarily meant to be on. So therefore, we eat a kezias of each one. So that explains why we do it that way.
Why can't we just keep the two matzahs, and that should be enough? We do two brachas on two matzahs.
Well, so that's the thing, because why don't we do the first bracha on only two matzahs? So that's the thing. That according to the Rambam, you could do that. You don't need two whole matzahs for hamotzi. But according to Rashi and the Rashbam, that you need two whole matzahs for hamotzi, that's the top and the bottom matzah, because the middle matzah is broken. So therefore, of necessity, during hamotzi, you have to be holding the top and bottom matzahs, which means then you're holding the middle one as well. So then we do that.
You could do a motzi on two matzahs, and then also al achilas matzah on these two matzahs. What's the problem?
Because the problem is you can't just do hamotzi and achilas matzah on those two matzahs, because someplace there you have to have this prusa. You have to have, given that we're saying over here, ma'oni shadaka b'prusa, afkan b'prusa, definitely something, one of the brachas has to be over the prusa. According to Rashi and the Rashbam, that is the bracha al achilas matzah. According to Rabbeinu Hananel, that is the broken, that's the bracha hamotzi. So one way or the other, either hamotzi or al achilas matzah has to be on the broken matzah. So therefore, what we do is, so we hold the broken matzah, so in short, we hold the broken matzah for both brachas, but for hamotzi, we hold all three matzahs in order that we have two complete matzahs, and that way we're following what Rashi and the Rashbam say, that you need two whole matzahs for that bracha. Now, Tosfos goes on to say, what we do is, when it comes to eating after motzi matzah, we only eat from the top two, then we save the third one, we don't use the third one yet, we use the third one later on for korech, that way we're accomplishing a mitzvah with each of the matzahs, that way we're accomplishing the mitzvah of motzi, of eating matzah, of eating the kazayis matzah, from the top and the middle one, a kazayis of each to be on the safe side. And then we use another kezayis from the bottom one for korech, and that way we're accomplishing a mitzvah with that one too.
Right, but why can't we break the matzah after we've made both brachas?
Because we want to break them. So technically, we could break. No, we definitely can't break the matzah after we make the brachas, because the whole point is the bracha has to be over a broken one. What it is, where we have to go on. So after I answer this question, let's go on. But in principle, you could break the matzahs right before you. You could in theory break the matzahs right before the matzah, rather the one matzah, right before you make the bracha. And in fact, the Rambam seems to phrase it that way. But the better thing is, since we said that it's supposed to be also lechem sha'onin olo dvarim harbe, that we say the Haggadah, we say Magid over the broken matzah, then the better way to do it is to break it before we start saying the Haggadah. That way, at the time we're saying, when we start saying Hey Lachma Anya, we and the rest of the Haggadah, we already have a broken matzah in front of us. So that way, we're mekayim both things. It's lechem oni at that point. It's broken. It's only a half a matzah, and now we're oinin all of dvarim habe. Now we're going to say many things over it. All right, let's go on. Another explanation of lechem oni. Poor people, you're not going to have. If a poor person is making bread at home, he'll fire up a stove, and his wife will bake. In other words, what they do is they don't want to delay any time after firing up the oven before they put in the bread, because meanwhile the oven may start cooling off, and then they've wasted wood. So therefore, they do it as fast as possible. So the same way, in other words, we see that lechem oni means that it's done as fast as possible in order that it shouldn't become chametz. So therefore, so another point from the word lachamoni itself, I mean, we know that it can't become chametz anyway, but from here we learn that you have to do the baking as fast as possible. Rabbi Goin says a different word on it also, and it means the poor person and his wife, they make their bread themselves. The same way, the ideal way is you make your own matzahs. You have chassidim v'anshei ma'aseh who do that, who make their own matzahs, although of course the rest of us don't, because we don't have the facilities for it, and we just buy from the bakeries. It's made by people who are involved. Of course, they're making a l'shem matzah mitzvah, but there are certain people who have the minhag to make their own, to gather together and make their own matzahs. Yeah. Okay. The Mishnah said afal pishein charoisis mitzvah. The Mishnah had said that you have to have charoisis on the table, even though charoisis is not a mitzvah. So the question is, and then we had Rabbi Elazar Rabbi Tzadik had said that it is a mitzvah. So the Eloi mitzvah, so you have to ask, if charoisis is not a mitzvah, mishum mai maisiva, then why do you have it on the table in the first place? What's the point of it? Amar Rav Ami mishum kappa. So Rav Ami says it's because of kappa, because of this dangerous stuff that you have in the lettuce leaves that we talked about yesterday. Either according to Rashi and the Rashbam's first explanation, it was a sharpness that you have in them, a sharp sap in them or the Rashbam's second explanation from Rabbeinu Hananel had been that it's a kind of worms that live in the lettuce. Whatever the case, the charoisis kills them off. We discussed yesterday that you have to dip it the whole thing in order to kill that off, or maybe it's enough to dip it in partway. So according to the Tanakhama, that's the purpose of charoisis, is just a practical thing, just in order that you don't get harmed by eating the lettuce. So that we're going to get to soon. So, Omer Abasi, kapadach. And in fact, by the way, the word charoisis more generally means any kind of dip that has a certain sharp flavor to it. Earlier in the Masechta, we had, for example, a case where it mentions over there that you're not allowed to put flour into charoisis. Charoisis or something like it was a dip they used during the year as well, but to dip various foods in. And normally during the year, they might thicken it with flour, but on Pesach, you can't do that. So Omer Abasi said, so Rab Asi tells us, by the way, kapa de chasa chama. If you ate chasa, if you ate lettuce anytime during the rest of the year, and you were affected by the kapa, you were affected by the sharpness or by these worms, then the remedy for it is chama. The remedy for it is to eat radishes. Kapa, now radishes themselves have a sharpness. Kapa de chama. So if you're affected by the sharpness of radishes, kauti, then what you do is you eat leeks. Kappa de kauti, and if you're affected badly by the kappa of leeks, chamimi, then have hot water, and that will take away the effect of that. Leeks are a vegetable. They look like overgrown. They look like overgrown scallions. You can find them in the soya. In fact, kappa de kulu chamimi, the remedy for the kappa of any other kind of food of any other kind of vegetables is to drink hot water. Meanwhile, while you're waiting for them to get you hot water, Nemahochi, you should say the following lachash, kappa kappa, dechirna loch, I remember you, ulashev benosach, and your seven daughters, ulatamni kalosach, and your eight daughters-in-law. So it's a lachash. Lachash and don't always have to have a meaning. You know, what does it mean? Seven daughters and eight daughters-in-law. It's just a lachash that at least on the simple level doesn't have a meaning. Although I did see something, we're quoting the Vilna Gaon a lot tonight, a lot this morning. I saw something from him that explains it. I'll be Kabbalah in terms of letters of the Aleph Beis. One of the ways of dividing up the letters of the Aleph Beis, we learned about it in Masech the Shabbos, is you divide it into three groups, seven, a group of seven, a group of seven, and a group of eight, and you can interchange letters from one to the other. Aleph interchanges with Ches and Samach, Beis with Tes and Ayin, etc., similar to Afbash and other things like that. You use it for finding various Sodas HaTorah and whatever. So you have a group, the second row over there has seven letters, the third row has eight letters, so therefore, so he ties it in symbolically with this idea over here about seven and eight. Then we said in the Mishnah, Rabbi Elazar ben Tzaddik omer mitzvah, that Rabbi Elazar ben Tzaddik said that charoisis is actually a mitzvah. So my mitzvah, in what a mitzvah because of what? Rabbi Levi omer zechel tapuach. Rabbi Levi says because it we put apples in it, and it reminds us of the apple trees under which the Jewish women would be giving birth. You have when the Mitzrayim had the Gzeira going that any baby boys are going to be thrown into the Nile. So the Gemara tells us in Sota that the Jewish women would go out to the fields and give birth under the apple trees. In fact, Rashi and the Rashbam both make a point of mentioning that it was beloy etzev. They didn't have any pain because they were noshim tzidkanias. So in the schus, so to remember that schus, and in fact it's mentioned in Shir Hashirim. I woke you up, so to speak. We say to Hashem, we woke you up under the apple tree. In other words, that the Jewish women had this bitachon and this emuna, and they were going and then giving birth to children, even though it's a very dangerous situation, but they're going under the apple trees, that evoked, that so to speak, awakened and evoked Hashem's rachmanus for us to take us out of Mitzrayim. So therefore, so now we make the charoisis with apples, and that reminds us of those apple trees where they showed that tremendous level of betochen. Tosfos mentions over here that actually from the Yerushalmi, actually from the Gaonim, that what you do is you make the charoisis out of various fruits that the Jewish people are compared to in Shir Hashirim. Besides for apples, he mentions also pomegranates, figs, dates, walnuts, almonds. So Lamaisa, the different communities, different Jewish communities have different minhagim how they make their charoisis. For example, when I was young, the Syrian charoisis that we ate was basically dates mashed up into a paste. But the one that we're familiar with is made with apples, pears, nuts, is made with apples, pears, and nuts. And it used to be also made with ginger and cinnamon, although the minhag Chabad anyway nowadays is not true, because we're going to say in a second that there is reason to have that. But on the other hand, we're concerned about chametz getting mixed into the spices, so we don't use them anymore. In general, we don't use spices during Pesach. So wine comes soon. Yeah. So, yeah. So Rabbi Levi says zeichel tapuach, Rabbi Yochanan amas zeichel tit. Rabbi Yochanan says it's a memory of the mud and the clay that the Jewish people used and had to work with in Mitzrayim, and therefore we have it's a clay-like consistency. So Amar Abaya, Hilkach, therefore, we need to follow both. Tzorach l'kahuyeh v'tzorach l'samuchay. We have to make the charoses a little bit sharpish, and we have to also make it thick. L'kahuyeh zeichel l'tapuach. We have to make it sharp to remember the tapuach. Even in other words, if we're not using actual apples in it, but it needs to have a tart flavor in it, like the flavor of apples, in order to remember that about the apple trees, but tzorach l'samuchay, and you need to make it thick. Zeichel l'tit, to remember the mud that the Jewish people were forced to work with in Mitzrayim. So there's your answer about the mud. Yeah, and in fact, so the Mefarshim say that's the idea also of using spices in it, like ginger and cinnamon, because those have like long, thin fibers in them. So those remind us of the straw that they had that the Mitzrayim forced them to put into the bricks. However, again, Minhag Chabad nowadays is that we don't because of the chashash of chametz. Tanya kavaseid Rabbi Yechanan. So we learn a brisa like what Rabbi Yechanan said. Tavlin zecher l'tevin. Yeah. So the spices are zecher of the straw that they used in the bricks. Charoses zecher l'tit. And the charoses as a whole is a memory of the mud that in Mitzrayim. Amar Rabbi Elazar ben Tzaddik, and Rabbi Elazar ben Tzaddik says, "Kachol yoimim tagrei chorach shebi Yerushalayim." This is what the merchants of Chorach used to say in Yerushalayim. Rashi and the Rashbam explain that Chorach is like another pasuk in Shir Hashirim, "Meitzes min acharakim." He looks out from the peers out from the windows. So a Chorach is a window. These were shopkeepers in Yerushalayim in the time of the Second Mikdash. They had stores in Yerushalayim, and they'd look out through the windows to where they'd stand by their windows and sell to the customers. They had these windows in their stores where afterwards the Mishnah tells us in the Masechta Beit said they'd take a piece of wood and use it to close up the store window when the store is closed. So they'd be standing by the windows, and therefore they're called Tagrei Chorach. So they would be saying in the days before Pesach, Boyer Tlulachem Tavlin LeMitzvah, come buy spices for the mitzvah. So we see that we see that Charoses really is a mitzvah, like Rabbi Elazar ben Tzaddik is saying in the Mishnah. In fact, the Rambam in Pirush HaMishnayos says that maybe Rabbi Elazar ben Tzaddik means that you should even make a bracha on it. But Lamaskana, it's not like that. The Rambam does basically paskin like Rabbi Elazar ben Tzaddik, that it's a mitzvah, that it's not just a practicality to get rid of kappa. But nevertheless, we don't say a bracha on it, because once we say a bracha on the maror, then it covers the charoses as well. An interesting side thing, by the way, is the Rambam writes that not only maror do you dip in charoses, the Rambam writes you dip matzah in charoses also. And the Ravid writes on this Zehevel. This is nonsense. And then many Rishonim and Achronim deal with Taka. Where does the Rambam get that from? That you should dip matzah and charoses. So there's a lot of discussion about it. The Rebbe has a sicha about it in Chelik Lamed Beis, a longish sicha where. One point is so the Rebbe brings like this an idea from the Rog. He starts with, but in the middle of the Sikha, he brings an idea from the Rogachover. Matzah, we know, represents two things. It represents, on the one hand, that Hashem took us out of Mitzrayim quickly. It also represents the slavery in Mitzrayim itself, but among other things. The Evan Ezra says that they gave the Jews matzah to eat because it's cheap and filling, rather than giving them regular bread. On the other hand, when there's no Beis Mikdash, we learned yesterday, Morer is only Dirabanan, meaning that on a Daraisa level, we don't really have something that reminds us of the Shibud so much. So the question then becomes, do we need to dip matzah in Charoses? Where we're saying over here that Charoses represents the mud of Mitzrayim. So the Rebbe takes that idea and expands on it. And explains that, yeah, that's the idea is, in other words, the machloikas of Rashi and of the Rambam and the Ravid would be, when the Beis Mikdash is standing, there's no question, the Ravid will agree, you have to dip matzah in charoses, because the matzah then has that double meaning of shibud and of cherus. But nowadays, when we're in Golos, then we really don't want to have any more reminder of the shibud than necessary, which is why Daraisa, we don't even have to have Morer, only Darabanan do we have to. So now the Rambam and the Ravid are arguing, do we still need to dip matzah in charoses? Is there still an aspect of matzah that represents shibud, or is it only representing cheirus? And further on, Rebbe talks about it in Avoda, that the charoses represents like the nekuda of the evil of Mitzrayim, and therefore on the zel umasel also the kim, it represents the nekuda of Yiddishkeit within the pintel of Yid within a person. person. And the question is how much that can affect, how much that can affect the your actions. So can that Pintel Yid be awakened enough even in the time of Golos to affect all of your actions throughout, which would be the Rambam's Shita, that you dip matzah in charoses? Or is it that really nowadays it's very difficult to do that, because we are in Golos and our bodies and are in Golos, and after all, the Neshama, okay, the Pintel Yid is not in Golos, but still, you know, everything that surrounds it is, and therefore that would be the Ravid's Shita, that you don't do that because you're not going to be able to accomplish, you're not going to be able to accomplish it that way, basically. How you're going to have to behave in Golos and what you're going to have to do is not going to be dependent on taking that Nekuda of Charoses and spreading it out, but rather in a different way. It's a longish sikha and well worth learning in full in Chelek Lamed Beis. Okay. Mishnah says, we're up to the next part of the Seder. Mozguloi kois sheni, they pour for him the second cup. V'kana ben shoyel oviv, and at this point, the son asks his father. Now, the connection is, Rashi says, and the Rashbam, that now you're pouring a second cup. Now that's supposed to make the kid really curious. We haven't even, Mela, we had one cup before, okay, Kiddush before the meal. We know we have that every Shabbos and Yom Tov. But why now are we pouring a second cup before we even began the meal? It's not usual to drink that much before the meal. So again, that'll lead him into asking Manishtana. The Rashbam brings another explanation from Rashi that the word is not v'kan, but v'chein. The word Cain, one of the meanings of Cain can mean correct, like Cain b'nois tzlav chadoveris. So it means it's correct. It's a proper thing that now, when you're pouring the second cup, the child should be asking, well, why is this night different? So v'im ein das b'ben, if the child himself doesn't have the das to ask, oviv melamdo, then his father teaches him. There's two ways of explaining that. Does it mean that if the child doesn't know how to ask these questions that we're saying manishtana, then the father should teach him the nusach of manishtana? That was, we learned before, Tosfos said that it's very nice to have the kids ask questions. Why are we pouring a second cup? Why are we removing the table and so forth? But we still have to have the actual nusach of manishtana. We have to have him ask the actual questions that we have here, that we're going to have here in the Mishnah. So according to Tosfos, then it would mean that if the child is not old and does not yet know how to ask these questions, then his father should teach him how to ask these questions. On the other hand, we said according to Rashi and the Rashbam, you don't really need these particular questions as long as the kid asks a question, then that's good enough, because you need to have the God Tlevincha by Yemo Lamer, but that has to be an answer to a question. So as long as it's any question, then it's fine. So then it would mean that if the child is not old enough to understand what Yitzias Mitzrayim is all about yet, then Ovi Balamda, then his father teaches us what Yitzias Mitzrayim is all about. So the nusach of the questions is Manishtana Halayla Azamikola Laylos. How or why is this night different than all of the nights? Actually, the Orach HaShulchan brings an interesting point. We always teach Manishtana as why is it different? Favos is the Andersh Dinach from Pesach. He points out the word Manishtana can also mean like an exclamation of surprise. This night is so different than all of the nights. Like Manish Mas sometimes, and like you have more Rabu Masecha Hashem. It doesn't mean how many are your works. It means how great are you, really, like as an expression of wonderment. So here also, it could mean that also. The Orach HaShulchan says that, yeah. Okay, so we continue. Now, the order that we have of the questions in the Mishnah over here is the order that the Velt has them in. So we'll talk about in a second about the order that we have them. Shebacholah leis onu oichlin chometz u'matzah. On all other nights, we can eat chometz or matzah. Alayla zekolei matzah. Tonight, we're eating only matzah. Shebacholah leis onu oichlin sh'or yirokis. On other nights, we can eat any kind of vegetables. Halayla zem morer. Tonight, we eat morer. Now, there was a girsa, kuloi morer, but Tosfos says that no, you don't say kuloi morer, because the fact is, we have other vegetables for karpas. So you can't say that we're eating only morer. Next, Shebacholah leis onu oichlin basar tzoli sholokum avoshol. On all our nights, we can eat meat roasted or boiled or cooked. Halayla zeh kulay tzoli. Tonight, we eat only roasted meat. This was a question they asked in the time of the Bais Mikdash when they have a Korban Pesach. Nowadays, we don't have a Korban Pesach, so we don't say that one. Tosfos points out, now, what about the Chagiga? We have the Chagiga Sabah also. That doesn't have to be roasted necessarily, but we learned the opinion of Ben Tamer earlier in the Masechta that says that you do, that everything that the chagiga that comes with the Korban Pesach has the dinim of the Korban Pesach, and yes, you do have to eat it roasted, just like the Korban Pesach. We discussed over there that it has to be eaten in the same time frame as the Korban Pesach, and then different other dinim about it, that you're not allowed to take it out of the group, etc., according to him. So when we say in the Mishnah over here, halayla is a kuloit soli, then that would amount. So Tosfos says, okay, then the fact that the Mishnah says the Mishnah says over here, halayla is a kuloit soli, doesn't mean the halacha is like Ben Tema necessarily. It maybe it is, maybe it's not, because the Mishnah is just bringing the nusach of the questions over here. But there are I think the Rambam paskins like Ben Tema on the strength of this Mishnah, because if we have a Stam Mishnah over here saying kuloi tzoli, that would be according to his shitta. So according to the Chachamim who disagree with him, you wouldn't say kuloi tzoli, you would just say tzoli, because you're eating roast meat. You have to eat roasted Pesach, but you don't have to. The chagiga could be prepared however you like. It was brought on Erev Pesach at the same time as the Korban Pesach. You're confusing the Chagigas Abba also with the Chagigas Hamisha. So we talked about this yesterday. You have every Yom Tov, you have a mitzvah to bring Korban Chagiga sometime during the Yom Tov, but then you also have Pesach uniquely. You have the Chagiga Sabah also, which is brought. We said before, we learned earlier in the Masechta, when Erev Pesach is not Shabbos, when you're not bringing the Korban Pesach Beturma, when you have only a small amount of Korban Pesach for each person because you have a large group, then you bring a Chagiga with it in order that the Pesach will be eaten ala soiva. But if it's Shabbos, or if you bring Beturma, or if you have a small group and a lot of Korban Pesach for each person, then you don't have to. Ain't a chanama, but yeah. Next, we ask Shabbachol Lelis. Now you have different Girsois over here. Let's leave out the parts in parentheses. Shabbachol Lelis onu matbilin pam echos halayla zeh shtei pam. On other nights we dip one time, and on this night we dip twice. The Gemara is going to modify that lashon a little bit, which is why you have the different things in parentheses over here. But so those are the questions. Now the Mishnah doesn't have over here the question about mesubin. Because in those times, there was nothing unusual about leaning by the table. They leaned by all their meals. Nowadays, that it's uncommon to, then we have that instead of the question about soli, although the Rambam actually brings both of them. The Rambam brings five questions altogether. So the order in the Mishnah over here is the order that the Velt does it in. The idea is first you're doing the mitzvah d'oraisa, which is matzah. Then you're doing the mitzvah d'rabbanan, which is maror. Then you're doing, okay, so again, the Korban Pesach we don't have nowadays. The next one after that is the question about matbilin, which is only a minhag. And then the last one is mesubin, given that that one was added later on. So that's the reason for the order of the Velt. We do it in the order matbilin, then matzah, then moror, then mesubin. So first of all, Tosfos mentioned the other day that matbilin logically comes first, because one of the things that stimulates the kids' curiosity is he sees that we were dipping one time for kaifas, then he sees we're taking away the table, as we said yesterday, and he's asking why are we taking away the table when we didn't even eat yet, and the answer is we're going to be bringing it back and we're yet going to do another dipping before we start the meal. So why are we doing two dippings before we even start the meal? That's the first question, matbilin. So then it follows from there. Then come the rest of the questions. And there's also a famous sicha where they never talked about that. The idea of it is that we want to put the one which is a minhag first in order to show the preciousness of minhagim. In a way, a minhag shows the fact that we keep a minhag shows that we have a greater connection between us and the Eivishter, that not just we're keeping the mitzvahs that we're required to do daraisa and darabanan, but even the ones that are only mishum minhag, that we keep those, and those are the kind of the primary thing that keeps a person's Yiddishkeit alive in a certain sense. Okay.
And well, the issue of a minhag is that unfortunately we don't have the same minhagim, and that brings a ton of divisions.
We don't have the same minhagim, and that brings a ton of division. That is true on Pesach more than any other time of the year. But on the other hand, those minhagim themselves keep Yiddishkeit fresh and vital. If everybody is just doing what it says, daraisa and darabanan, then their Yiddishkeit becomes very stale. When you do the minhagim, that itself helps keep things fresh and lively and engaging.
Okay, that's an opinion, right?
Yeah. Okay. So the Mishnah continues, according to the das of the child, the father teaches him. In other words, however much the child understands, if he understands more, then you explain more. If less, then less. The Rambam gives an example. If the child is a very simple, a little kid, or a kid who doesn't understand very much, then you explain to him. For example, you see that Eved, or you see that Shifcha over there. Imagine this is what we were like in Mitzrayim. And now the Eibishter took us out of there, and that would be the extent of it. And then if the kid is older and is able to understand more, then you explain to them more about it. Right? You have to have an Eved Shivcha around to show that. But yeah, okay. Mascha b'gnus m'sayim b'shvach. Now, when you begin the answer to the child's questions, you begin with the degradation of the Jewish people, and you finish off with the praise of the Jewish people, which we're going to see in the Gemara, two opinions what that is. The Dardash me Arami Oved Avi, you darshan in the Psukim beginning from Arami Oved Avi, which is in the Parsha of Bikurim, Ad Sheyigma Kola Parsha Kola, until you finish the entire Parsha, we darshan in the four Psukim, or the first four Psukim of Mikra Bikurim over there, until up to and including Vayetzien Hashem Mitzrayim Yad Chazaka Vizyon Etuya of Mora God of Oisus of Moifsim. We go phrase by phrase in the Haggadah and darshan in those Psukim. By the way, in Mikra Bikurim, you have another pasuk. You continue Vayivienu al Amakam Azeh Vayitan Lanu Asaretz Azois. Now we don't do that because because it's after the Churban and after the Golos, so we can't really say Vayivienu al Amakam Azeh. But there is an interesting idea that is why in Dayenu on Alachas Kama Vakama, why do we finish off? We go through all the things that the Eibishter did for us and finish off. That represents those psukim over there. That represents that pasuk. That represents that last pasuk that Hashem brought us to Eretz Yisrael and brought us to this place, the Beis Mikdash. So we're not darshaning those psukim phrase by phrase. Maybe they did in the time of the Beis Mikdash, but we at least say that part in order to represent that pasuk. Okay, so the Gemara says Tanan Rabbanan, Chacham Bnoi Shoyaloi. If the child is a Chacham, then he asks his father himself. V'im Eine Chacham, if the child is not smart enough to ask these questions himself, Ishtoi Shealtoi, then his wife asks the questions. V'im Lav Hu Shoyalatzmoi, and if his wife is not able to, or he doesn't have a wife, then he asks himself the questions. V'afilu Shnei Tamar Chachamim, Sh'yodin B'Hilchas HaPesach, even if two Tamar Chachamim, who all know the halachas of Pesach, like we say, v'afilu kolonu chachamim, kolonu nevoinim, etc. Shoylem zelozem, manishtana alayla zem, b'kol alaylis, they still have to ask the question, because the Haggadah has to begin with a question, or a series of questions. So no matter what, somebody has to be asking the questions. The Rambam, by the way, phrases it that the child asks, and then the Rambam phrases it that the Kore, that the one who's reading the Haggadah for the group, says Manishtana Halaylazeh. This is the source of our minhag, that after the children ask Manishtana, then the adults say it over themselves. Okay. We said in the Mishnah, Shabachol Alelis Onumat Bilin Pam Echos Halaylazeh Shtei Pamim. We said on all other nights, we dip only once, and tonight we dip once, and tonight we dip twice. Maskif lo Rabba, but Rabba says, how could you use that nusach? What do you mean? Are we required every other time to dip one time? That we're using the expression onu matbilin pam echos, like it's a chiyuv, we have to dip every time, one time? We don't. Yes, they usually ate their food with dipping, as we learned the other day, but you weren't required to on a regular weekday or Shabbos or Yom Tov. So why use the expression onu matbilin pam echos, which implies we have a requirement on other times to dip one time? By the way, I mean, we do, of course, we dip the challah in salt. But when you get down to it, the Gemara tells us in Brachas, technically, al pi halacha, you're not really required to, unless the bread wouldn't have a taste otherwise. If it's good bread that has a good taste to it, as our bread nowadays does, technically you're not, and especially if they put salt in it while they're baking, as bread usually is, then you're actually not required to dip it in salt. The minhag is too, and there is the idea, because like they had salt on the mizbeach for the korbanos in this week's parasha, but mi'ikra din, you're not required to. Okay. So Ella Amar Rava Hachi Katani. So Rava says rather we have to fix up the wording of the Mishnah and say Shabacholos Ein Ono Chayoven the Tabla for the Pamechas. On other nights we're not required to dip even one time. Halayla as Ashtei Famim, and tonight we're required to dip twice. Maskiflo Rab Safra, but Rab Safra still says, how does that work? How can you call it a chiyuv when we're only doing the first one, at least, only in order to make the kids curious so they should ask? That can't be considered a chiyuv, that we should say that we're chayov in the table. Also, a different explanation of it is, that was saying a kid, what does he know the difference between chayev and not chayev? How can you say that chayev and latabel, as far as he knows, we're dipping. He doesn't know the difference whether we're chayev to do it or whether we're just doing it because we feel like it or because of a minig or whatever. So that lashon doesn't work. We don't dip even one time. Tonight we dip twice. And this is, of course, the nusach that we do. So we're stressing, in other words, that we don't, other nights we could dip, but on other nights we don't dip. We don't dip. It's not normal to dip, especially before the meal, even once. Tonight, twice. Well, during the meal itself, again, they would dip many times, but before the meal, which is what we did, that we don't usually even dip once. And here, before the main part of the meal, before Shulchan Aruch, we're already going to have been dipping twice, once Karpas and once Moro. Yeah. We said mascha b'gnus masayim b'shvach. You begin with the degradation and the lowliness of the Jewish people, and you continue with, and you finish off with the shvach. My b'gnus. So what's the gnus that we do? Rav omer metchila av oivde avod is gilulam hoyu avisenu. We start by saying that originally our ancestors were oivde avod azara. That's the gnus. That then va'achshav, and then the shvach is va'achshav kermonu amokam labidasa. That now Hashem removed us from that and brought us close to serving Him. Or Shmuel amar avodim ayinu. Shmuel says we begin with the fact that the Jewish people were avodim. In its name, and Vayetzeinu Hashem Elokeinu Misham. So we do both. We do both. We do first Shmuel's and then Rav's. There is actually an understanding that some Rishonim have that Rav and Shmuel both agree you do have to say both of them. The question is just which one you say first. And then we're saying that we do like Shmuel. We're doing like Shmuel. We're saying Avodim Ayinu first, and only then later on do we say Mitchila Ovid Avod Azar. So the Gemara tells, Amalei Rab Nachman L'Doru Avdei, speaking of having Avodim at Yuseder, Rab Nachman one time says to his slave Doru, he asks him at the beginning of the Seder, Avda D'Mapik Le'Morin L'Cherus, imagine you have an Eved whose master set him free, the Yoiv Le'Kaspa V'Dava, and he gave him gold and silver, as we had when we left Mitzrayim, my boy L'Mei Marle, what does he have to tell his master? Amalei, so Doru says, Boy Lo Hidu Yer L'Shabuchi. He has to thank and pray, praise his master for the tremendous good that he did. Amalei, so Rav Nachman says, oh, P'tautun Min Loimim Manishtana. By saying that, you've patterned us from saying Manishtana. Posach Vama, Avodim Ayinu, and he started with saying Avodim Ayinu. Now, in what way does that patter from Manishtana? L'chura, there's not a question. So one possibility is, yes, the fact that Rav Nachman asked a question, again, according to the Shitta of Rashi and the Rashbam, the fact that a question was asked, namely that Rav Nachman asked, what should a slave do in that situation, is enough to be considered a question that would be an introduction to the Seder. And therefore, at that point, you don't need the Nusach of Manishtana. According to Tosfos' Shitta, that regardless, you need the Nusach of Manishtana, then what Rav Nachman is saying is, now we still do need to have one. You have a child over there by the Seder, and he has to ask the Nusach of Manishtana. But now I, Rav Nachman, as the leader of the Seder, don't have to repeat Manishtana, because now with this question and answer between me and you, we've just explained the basis of the whole Seder. So now we can go straight into Avodim Ayin. The Rashbam seems to have it that way, because he says La'acha She'elos Abein, after the child asked Manishtana, he started saying Avodim Ayinu. So in other words, the implication is it wasn't that this stood instead of Manishtana. The kids still asked Manishtana, but the point is, this was instead of normally Rav Nachman should have repeated over the questions, like the Rambam is saying, now he doesn't need to because of this give and take between him and Doru. The main thing is the kid should ask, right? But we said if there's no kid, then somebody else should, right? Okay. The Mishnah continues, Ram Gamliel Hoya Oimer, this is all from the Nusach of the Haggadah, Ram Gamliel Hoya Oimer, anybody who did not say these three things on Pesach, and means not just to say, that Rashbam says it means to explain the reason behind why we do these mitzvahs, he's not yotze his choiva. Now, what choiva are we talking about? There is a machlokas rishonim. There's a double machlokas over here. First of all, do we mean that he's not yotze the mitzvah of eating Pesach matzah and maror, or that he's not yotze the mitzvah of saying the Haggadah? And second of all, when we say lo yotze, do we mean that he's not yotze at all, or do we mean he's yotze on a daraisa level, but he's not doing it in the proper way? Ve'elohen Pesach Matzah Umar. The Marsha over here has a long explanation. Now, usually when we do mitzvahs, we're not usually required to explain and understand the reason why we do behind why we do the mitzvahs. We don't find, for example, before we listen to shofar on Rosh Hashanah, we take the lulav on Sukkos that we have to sit and say psukim why we're doing it. Why epis over here? So he explains that each of these things, Pesach, Matzah, and Maror, each of them represents in its own way this gnus and shvach that we just said before on Amud Aleph, how we were originally in such a low state, and then Hashem brought us out of that. Pesach is, for example, it's a sheep, which we know the Mitzrayim were worshipping sheep, and some Jews in Mitzrayim were worshipping Avodah Zarah along with the Egyptians, and now all of a sudden it's turned around, and now all of a sudden we're taking the sheep and tying it to our beds and shechting it and eating it. And the same thing with matzah, and the same thing with Moro represents, for example, that we said we learned earlier in the Masechta, Moro starts out sweet, and only later it becomes bitter. So it represents this kind of transformation. Matzah also, that so each one of them represents the transformation of the Jewish people, and therefore more so than any other mitzvahs, we need to actually specify and give the reasons why we're eating them.
So is there any connection between the fact that we practice Avodah Zarah and we became slaves? Is that one cause and an effect?
Is there a cause and effect between the fact that Jews were worshipping Avodah Zarah and became slaves? Yes, in fact, you actually have a pasuk in Tehillim in Kapitel Kuf Hei when it summarizes the events of Yetzias Mitzrayim. It mentions over there Hofach Libam Lisnei Avdoi, that the Hashem turned their hearts from the Mitzrayim to hate the Jews. And the Medrash says the reason is because the Jewish people were starting to assimilate among the Mitzrayim, so therefore the Eibishter caused that the Mitzrayim are all of a sudden going to start feeling this tremendous wave of anti-Semitism, and that itself helped keep the Jewish people from assimilating completely.
But what other example? Yeah,
well, that's what we mean. In other words, that unfortunately, sometimes it happens in Jewish history that we need people hating us and keeping us apart in order to talk and keep apart, because otherwise we're apt to assimilate among the goyim. On the other hand, it is true that the Avdus itself caused, there were people who, partially because of the pressures of the slavery in Mitzrayim, we're going off the derech and we're worshiping Avodah Zarah and whatever. So it was kind of a feedback loop. It's true, but the idea seems to be based on that medrash that if the Jewish people had all acted like Levi and they're all fatifed and learning Torah and not going and mixing and assimilating among the goyim, then it might not have been necessary for there to be a shibud at all. There could have just been that we'd live in Mitzrayim, as guests until the time when the Eibishter takes us out of there.
But the question goes a little further. Could we have received Matan Torah without being slaves in Mitzrayim
Could we have received the Torah without being slaves? It's a good question. And I think there are actually a number of Svarim that talk about it and say that in a way, yeah, it was a necessary prerequisite because... like this, we come to Har Sinai. The Eibishter is giving us the Torah and telling us you have this, this, and this rule. If we hadn't been avodim beforehand, we would be likely to say, thank you very much. Why should we bother any more so than any of the other nations that the Eibishter offered the Torah to? But because we were slaves and now we're able to appreciate the difference between being a slave of a cruel guy like Paray and his nation versus being slaves of Hashem. And plus there was also the gratitude for the Hashem taking us out of slavery. So therefore that made the Jewish people much more receptive to receiving the Torah. So yeah, if we hadn't been actual slaves in Mitzrayim, if we had just been honored guests for the whole 210 or 400 years or whatever, it's possible that it might have been that the Torah might have been a harder sell to the Jewish people. We don't know. But yeah, there is that idea. All right. Mm-hmm. So Pesach, al shum shepasach hamokam abotei avoseinu b'Mitzrayim. The Pesach is because Hashem posach over the houses of our fathers in Mitzrayim, which Rashi mentions on the Psukim, two meaning of posach. One meaning is to jump over. And the other is to have rachmanos. Rashi brings psukim where the shodesh posach has two as one or the other meaning. In some places it means to jump over, like poschim al shtei asipim. And another meaning of it is to have rachmanos. Pasayach vehimlit. Pasuk from Yeshaya. Pasayach vehitzel ganuya. So what? So no, so that's the thing. So the word Pesach has a double meaning. It means that Hashem jumped and skipped over the houses of the Jews when it came to Makkos Bechoros. It also means that Hashem had rachmanos on the houses of the Jews. What? The Himlet means to save. I mean, it means to rescue, yeah. Okay. As the Pasuk says, you should say this is a korban Pesach to Hashem because he posach, because he jumped over, or he had rachmanos on our houses. Matzah is al shum shanigula v'senim Mitzrayim is because our ancestors were redeemed from Mitzrayim. Shenema v'ayoyfor sabotzik asher yitzim Mitzrayim v'gemer. They baked the dough and it didn't even have time to become chometz because they were going out so fast. Famous thing that the Mefoshim point out is that first of all, you have like this, they had a mitzvah of eating matzah the night before already. They ate the Korban Pesach with matzah before it even happened, because the Eibishter wanted them to, the Eibishter, of course, knows what's going to be in the future. He knew that they're going to be going out so quickly that it won't have time to rise. So in effect, what it was is that the Hashem wants them to commemorate it with matzah before the Ness even happens. Like you don't even need to wait for the Ness to happen to commemorate it. You know it's going to happen, therefore you can commemorate it in advance. Al-Darach, like we have with Mashiach, so that we're commemorating in advance Mashiach's coming, even though he hasn't come yet, but because we know it's going to happen. There's also an interesting point that now that you're not allowed to have chametz during Pesach, so of course they couldn't have chametz to kado. So what's the point? So one explanation is that we learned earlier in the Masechta that the issur of chametz the year they left Mitzrayim was only that first day. So conceivably, therefore, they could have prepared dough and it would have become chametz, and they would have baked it and they would have had chametz bread for the second day of Pesach. But like this, instead, they were going so quickly that it didn't have time to rise. So on the first day of Pesach, they're leaving with dough. And in principle, they could have, so now they're not allowed to eat chametz that first day, but they're allowed to have chametz in their possession. And they're allowed to eat it the next day. So they could have done that, but they were in such a hurry, they left in such a hurry, that in the end, it didn't have time to rise. And so it actually became matzah. And in the end, of course, we know they ate those matzahs for the next few weeks until the mun started falling. That it didn't spoil those few weeks. Yeah. The Abba Benel, by the way, says a point about it. You see, for example, that the distance from Ramses to Sukkos, which is the first stage of the trip. Normally, it takes 3 days. It actually says it's 120 mil, and a normal person we learned earlier walks 40 mil a day. So normally it should have taken them 3 days. So by that time, the dough would have long since been chametz. But we're stressing how fast it was that the Eibishter brought them there. I'll kind of finish on him so fast that within 18 minutes, a trip that normally should take 3 days took within 18 minutes, and the dough didn't have time to rise yet. Next, moror al shum shemeru al mitzrim es chaya b'senim mitzrayim. And moror we eat because the mitzrayim embittered our fathers' lives in mitzrayim. Shenema v'yimoror es chayim v'gemim, because the pasuk says they embittered their lives. Therefore, we continue in the Haggadah. B'chol der v'der chayav adam lirais es atzmai kilu hu yotzim Mitzrayim. In every generation, a person has to see himself as though he went out of Mitzrayim. The Rambam actually has a girsa, not lirais, but laharos, which means not to see himself, but to show himself, which is the basis of this minhag, of all the minhagim that we do on Pesach night, the various things that we do to show that we're b'nei chorin. For example, the fact that we recline, for example, that you have somebody else pour the wine for you if possible, all these kinds of things, is laharis esatzma, to demonstrate to everybody else that you are a ben chorin. Shenema, v'yigadta levincha b'yemo ulema, as the Pesach says, you should tell your children on that day, it's the saying, b'avur zeh, because of this osa Hashem li, Hashem did for me, but say sim Mitzrayim, when I went out of Mitzrayim. Now this is addressed to future generations. You didn't personally go out of Mitzrayim, but you have to consider as though you did. You also have, of course, what the Alter Rebbe mentions in Perek Mem Zayin of Tanya, that on a ruchniistical level, a person can be going out of Mitzrayim every day, because Mitzrayim is Erva Sa'aretz, is the Mitzorim or Gvulim of the Nefesh of Bahamas, and every day a person can be getting out of that. Lefichach, therefore, we continue in the Nusach of the Haggadah. Anachnu chayovim lahoidos, we have to praise, lahalel, to also the various synonyms for praising. Lahoidos, lahalel, lashabeach, lefor, leroimim, lahadr, levorach, la'ale, lekales, to thank and to praise and to give glory and then to exalt and then so on and so forth. Lamisha also Abisena Volano as Kalan Nisima Elu, for the one who did for our ancestors and for our ancestors and for us all of these Nisim. Tosfos on the previous Omud, by the way, mentions a possibility. Now, like this, we have 9 Lashonis over here. And then we have, at the end, we have the Noma Lafon of Halaluka is the 10th Lashon. So you have 10 Lashonis of praise of Hashem corresponding to the 10 Makas, corresponding to various other 10s. Tosfos on the printed on a previous Omud says that Yesh Omim, you only have 7. Connected the Zion Rakim, connected the 7 levels of heaven. Okay. Hotzionu me'avdus l'cheres, Hashem took us out from slavery to freedom, me'yogin l'simcha, from sadness to happiness, u'me'evil l'yomtov, from mourning to holiday, u'me'afelu l'ergodo, from darkness to a great light, u'me'shibud l'gu'ula, from slavery to freedom, v'neim l'fonav halleluka, and we say before Hashem halleluka. Tosfos brings a girsa over here that which you find in some Haggadahs, that you add in there the words shira chadasha, and in that so it would be v'nemar or v'noimel afon of shira chadasha halleluka. Now the shira chadasha in that case would not refer to the shira that we're going to say when Mashiach comes, because that's called shir b'loshen zachar. Rather, there's an idea. The Medrash says that all other shiras are b'loshen nekeva, because like a woman gives birth and later on she becomes pregnant and has to go through the whole thing again. The same way, there was a geula, and then there was another golos afterwards, whereas the geula hasida is going to be the last one, so therefore it's like a zachar. But Tosfos says the word of here should be v'ne'emar. It was said, meaning that the Jewish people said before you by Kriyas Yamsuf, Shira Chadasha Halleluka. So you have in some Haggadahs, they have the Nusach that way, with v'ne'emar or v'noim alafon of Shira Chadasha Halleluka. Or Nusach as we don't, which is v'noim alafon of Halleluka, like it says here in the Mishnah. Next, Ad Heichanoimer. Now, at this point, you're saying part of Hallel. How far do you say? B'shama says you just say the first chapter of Hallel till Ema Bonim Smecha. B'silo says the second chapter as well. The Yerushalmi, I think it is, explains the idea behind it is that B'shama argues to B'silo, how could you be saying B'tzeisi Sirom Mitzrayim when you're talking, it's early in the Seder, you haven't even commemorated the actual Yetzias Mitzrayim yet with eating matzah and maror. So what are you already saying? B'tzeisi Sirom Mitzrayim. The Yitzia only happened after Chatzos. So why are you saying it this early in the Seder? You should be saying it later on by Hallel. Fine, but we didn't actually do that much to commemorate Yitzias Mitzrayim yet. So Beis Shammai argues the actual Yitzias Mitzrayim was later after Chatzos. Why should he be saying it now? And Basilo says, listen, the fact is they only left during the daytime. So even if you delayed Betzeis Yisrael until later in the Seder, you're still not saying it at the right time. So therefore you finish off the whole Inyan now. The first two kapitlach primarily talk about Yitzias Mitzrayim. The rest of them from Loilonu primarily talk about the Geula Hasida. Therefore you do the two of them together over here, and you leave the other ones for later. Yeah. That's why we do it. So the fact that we break it up is b'chlal, there's an idea. Usually when we say Hallel is as a tefillah kind of. Here we're saying it as a shira. Because and therefore one interesting point that the Mefoshim say is you want to have every one of the four cups on Pesach night, you should have some kind of shira to Hashem in it. So the first one you have Kiddush. The third one you have benching, which is praising Hashem for the food he gave us. The fourth one, what? Bisham, no, okay, but first of all, I mean, that may not have been in the early Haggadah. I mean, the Haggadah was assembled over a period of time, but Bisham is a Shira, but still, it's not really a primary part of the the third one you have benching, the fourth one you have Hallel, so therefore you want to have something for the second one, so therefore you want to have part of Hallel at this point. And then the Machloka says, how far, what part of Hallel is pertinent at this point? Yeah. Okay. V'choisim b'gola. Now, you finish off with a bracha thanking Hashem for the gola. So this is the Tanakh. Now we're going to have two opinions what that bracha consists of. The Rashbam and Tosfos explain we don't have three opinions over here. It's not that we have the Tanakhama saying Choisim Begola and then Reb Tarfon saying a nusach and saying a different nusach and Reb Akiva saying a different nusach. The Tanakhama is saying a generic statement Choisim Begola. You have to finish off with a bracha of gola. Now Reb Tarfon and Reb Akiva are going to argue what is the nusach of that bracha. Given that there has to be a bracha of gola, what is the nusach of it? Reb Taufen Omer, Asher Ga'alanu Regalas of Asenim Mitzrayim. You just say that Hashem redeemed us and redeemed our ancestors from Mitzrayim. Okay, the Rif and the Rosh add also the line that we have in the Haggadah, V'higyonu alayla azeh lechol b'matzah u'maror, that he brought us to this night to eat matzah and maror. And v'loy ha'yachosim, you don't finish off with Baruch Atah Hashem Ga'al Yisrael, because Reb Taufen's Nusach is what we call a short bracha, a bracha ktsara. We learned earlier in our parak that a short bracha is one that basically just has one theme to it, and therefore it's like the brachas on food and the brachas on mitzvahs or whatever. You just say Baruch Atah Hashem, such an borei pri hadama, or Baruch Atah Hashem Asher Kedushanu Mitzvosav, Mitzivanu, such and such. And you don't finish with another bracha afterwards because it's a short one-line bracha. So the same thing, Reb Tarfon's nusach is basically a very short nusach. So there's nothing to add to it. Rabbi Kiva says, no, there's a longer nusach. So also Hashem should bring us to other moyadim and other regalim that will come to us in peace. Moyadim means the Avudraham, I think, explains. Moyadim means Rashanim Kippur. Regalim means the Shalosh Regalim, that Hashem should bring us to those. Smechem b'binyan irecha, happy with the building of your city. V'sasim avodasecha, and joyful in your avoda. And we should be able to eat there from the psachim and from the zvachim, from the other korbanos. And you continue the bracha. Add baruch atah Hashem, Gal Yisrael, and we finish off with the bracha because Rabbi Akiva's nusach already is a bracha arucha. It's a long thing. You have a tefillah for the future, so therefore you have to finish it off with a nusach baruch. You have to finish it off with a short bracha, baruch atah Hashem, and we do baruch atah Hashem, Gal Yisrael. There's the famous thing you have over here in parenthesis, min apsochem, min azvochem. You have the famous thing from the Maharil and a couple of other Rishonim that normally we say min azvochem, min apsochem, because normally we eat the zevach, the chagiga, before we eat the Pesach. But when Pesach is on Matzoi Shabbos, and again, they wouldn't be bringing the chagiga, then you say min apsochem, min azvochem. That's on minag. Many other Haggadahs have it like that also. On the other hand, Yesha Omerim, for example, Rabbi Yaakov Emden, and others say that there's no need to change it around. You always say min azvochem, min apsochem, because most years that's how it is. And the fact is, even so, what, for example, you know, we're going to be sitting this year by our Seder tables and saying, and if Mashiach Chas V'Shalom hasn't come yet by then, we're going to be saying this Nusach, but we're talking about how it should be next year. Well, next year, Erev Pesach is not going to be on Shabbos necessarily. So according to them, there's no reason to change the Nusach. But the Alter Rebbe was Machria, like the opinions that we do. Okay. So the Gemara says, Omar Rava, Tzorech Shiyom Avoi Sanu Hoitzi Misham. When you're saying this B'chol Der V'Der, you also have to say, Hashem took us out from there. In other words, it's not just enough to say, "Behold, over there, Chayvanim Lirus Atzmai." The Yigad to Levincha. You have to also add the Pasuk for Oisano Hoitzi Misham. Hashem took us out of there to stress that idea more. And we have that in that paragraph in the Haggadah. Omar Rava, Matzah Tzorich Lagbia. Rava says, when you say Matzah Zushano Oichlim, you have to lift up the Matzah. Umoru Tzorich Lagbia, and the Moru also you have to lift up when you say Moru Zeh. So on minute, because we don't lift them up, we just put our hand on them. On the other hand, Boser ain't Sarach Lagbia. On the other hand, when you say Pesach Shoyu Avisenu Oichlim, you don't lift up the Zeroya. Veloy Oid, not only you don't have to, but you shouldn't. It's going to look like you're eating Kodshim outside the Beis Mikdash. It's going to look like you were Makdish this as a Korban Pesach before it was Shechted, and now you're going to be eating it as a Korban Pesach, and you can't do that. So therefore, Bedavka, we don't lift it up. Rashbam and Tosfos do mention earlier when we talked about before that you lift up the Seder plate before Magid. Well, okay, again, all minigas, we just cover it. But when it's said in the Gemara that you lift it up, there's no problem lifting it up with the meat on it because you're lifting up the whole thing together. So it doesn't look like you're singling out the meat. But here, if you were to lift it up, put your hand on it, when you say Pesach Zesh or Pesach Shoyu Avosenu Oichlim, then it would look like it. Okay. Amr of Achaba Yaakov, Suma Potter Miloy Mahagodah. A blind person is Potter from saying the Haggadah. Why? Ksiv Hocha Ba'avur Zeh, because he was saying Ba'avur Zeh Osa Hashem Li, Uchtiv Osa B'neinu Zeh, by the Ben Sarah Remoter, the expression is, this is our son. Malahalam Pratlus Suma, so just like over there, it means if the parents are blind, then the kid can't become a Ben Sarah Remoter. Afkan Pratlus Suma, the same thing over here. If a person is blind, then he's not chayiv to say the Haggadah. So the Gemara says, "Eni, is that so?" But didn't Meremar say, "Sheiltinu l'rabbon and debay Rabbi Yosef"? I asked the Chachamim of the Yeshiva of Rabbi Yosef, "Man de Omer Agad debay Rabbi Yosef, who says the Haggadah in Rabbi Yosef's by Rabbi Yosef's Seder table?" Now, like this, nowadays we all say the Haggadah together, because everybody has a printed Haggadah in front of them. But in those times, when everything was Baal Peh, the usual way was one person would say it and everybody else would listen and be yotzim. It's at Shemei Akoinim. So who does that by Rabbi Yosef? And they answered Rabbi Yosef. Rabbi Yosef. He asked, Man de Omer Agad de Beit Rav Sheshes. Who says the Agada by Rav Sheshes? Omru Rav Sheshes. Now Rabbi Yosef and Rav Sheshes were both blind. So we see that they were able to be motzi, the olam, with saying the Haggadah. So what do you mean that a blind person is potter? The answer is Kasabi Rabbanan Matzah Bisman Azed Rabbanan. Rabbi Yosef and Rabbi Sheshes hold that matzah nowadays is only Dirabbanan, which is a point that we're going to discuss in a couple of blat. We said before that Morer is definitely Dirabbanan nowadays, but matzah, there's a machlokus whether it's Daraisa or Dirabbanan. So Rabbi Yosef and Rabbi Sheshes hold it's Dirabbanan. If it's Dirabbanan and Morer is also Dirabbanan, then saying the Haggadah is also Dirabbanan. Because if we're saying it has to be B'shar Sheyesh Matzah Morer Menachem Lefanecha, so if on a Daraisa level you don't need matzah or Morer, then you don't need the Haggadah either. So fine, it's only Dirabbanan. Then they can be motzi. So the question is, McLeod that Rab Acha by Yaakov sava matzah bezman hazeh d'oraisa. So what's the implication that Rab Acha by Yaakov holds that nowadays it's d'oraisa, and therefore he's saying that now that a blind person is potter from it. Later on in that sugya and Daf Kufchav, Rab Acha by Yaakov himself is the one who says that it's d'rabanan. The answer is Kasava, yeah, but Rabbi Acha bar Yaakov holds called the Tokun Rabbanon Kein Daraisa Tokun. He holds, yes, but it is only Dirabbanon. But when the Chachamim make a Takana Dirabbanon, they usually make it as similar as possible to the similar thing Daraisa. So therefore, in this case, yes, it's only Dirabbanon nowadays, Matzah, and therefore the Haggadah. But nevertheless, if Daraisa, a blind person, is Potter, then the Chachamim aren't going to require him to do it either. So where's Rabbi Yosef and Rabbi Sheshes would be disagreeing with that. So the question is why? Rabbi Yosef Nami Havade called the Tokun Rabbanon Kein Daraisa Tokun. No, don't they agree with that Svara? So the answer is no. The Gemara says actually what it is Rabbi Yosef and Rabbi Sheshes disagree with Rabbi Acha bar Yaakov's premise that you can learn the chiyuv of the Haggadah from the Ben Sora Mora. So Hochi Hashta. How are you thinking to compare them? B'shleima Hosam. When it comes to the Ben Sora Mora, we can douse in something extra from the word Zeh, midahavale lemichta b'neinu hu, because it could have just said, he is our son. After all, the Ben Sora Mora goes through a multi-step process. The first time that he steals the money and eats the meat and the wine and whatever, they take him to Beis Din and they give him Malkus. Only if he does that again does he get Skila. So fine, it has to be. They have to tell the Beis Din, you should know, this is the same child who we previously brought to you the first time around. So fine, for that, the Pasuk could have said, b'neinu hu. Instead, it says Zeh, Marabetz Boy, which implies Marabetz Boy. You're able to point to him and say Zeh, Shmamina Pratla Sumunu Dosa. So that means that it comes to exclude blind people. Aval Hacha, but over here, Ila Bavur Zeh Mai Lichtim. How else could the Torah have written if not Bavur Zeh? Ela Bavur Matzo Mora Hudasa. So it's not coming to exclude a blind person. It just means that you have to have the Matzo Mora, have to be Munachan Lefanach, have to be in front of you when you're saying that God. But not necessarily that you have to be able to point at them and say, this is the matzah, this is the morer. So therefore, yes, a blind person is just as much chayev in the Haggadah and in the Seder as everybody else. And therefore, so Rabbi Yosef and Rabbi Sheshes, they don't even have to hold that matzah nowadays is Rabbanon. They can hold it to Daraisa. And no problem, they can be motzi everybody, even though they themselves are blind. And that's the halacha. So the parents have to bring the Ben Sora Mora based in. They have to be able to say, B'neinu Zeh. So if they're blind, they're not able to say that. But so Rav Acha bar Yaakov compared that to the Haggadah and said, therefore, just like blind parents can't have a Ben Sora Mora, the same way a blind person is not chayev in the Haggadah on a Daraisa level, only Dirabbanan. Rabbi Yosef and Rabbi Sheshes disagree with that and say that first the Gemara thought that they agree that it's Dirabbanan, but then we said no, because it has to be Kein Daraisa. So now we're saying that no, they're saying that Bechlal it's Daraisa. We don't accept Rabbi Acha bar Yaakov's equivalence at all, because the difference is, by Ben Sora Mora, the Torah could have written it differently and it didn't, but here it had no, there's no other way to write other than Bavur Zeh, which means B'shar Sheyesh Matzo Mor Menachem Lefanecha, and therefore that's it. So we're not excluding blind people, and that is the halacha. Blind people are also chayev in the mitzvahs of Pesach, like everybody else.
Are they also chayev to say Hey Lachma Anya? How can they say that if they're blind?
So is a blind person chayev to say Hey Lachma Anya? I mean, chayev. I mean, Hey Lachma Anya itself is not originally part of the nusach of the Haggadah. It's it's something you have to realize. The Haggadah, you have a core of the Haggadah which you're required al pi halacha to say, which we had, for example, in the Mishnah. We had excerpts from it, and they have different parts that were added in different generations. Hey Lachma Anya may be one of those. So chiyuv, I don't know. I mean, he could say it. It won't hurt him to say it, but is he required to? I don't know. It does bring, and it's worth mentioning in this connection, an interesting thing. It says in Shulchan Aruch, it tells about one time there was a person who was in jail over Pesach. A Yid was in jail over Pesach. He didn't have a Haggadah with him, but he had a Chumash with him. So he didn't know the Haggadah by heart, but what he did is to be yotze the mitzvah of Haggadah, he opened up his Chumash and read all the sections that deal with Yetzias Mitzrayim. And it mentions that in Shulchan Aruch, as in other words, that the implication being that he was yotze, that there was yotze on some level the Haggadah by doing that.
What about Matzah Zeh? And what is he going to say? Matzah Zeh.
So when he came to Matzah Zu, if he had matzah with him, he could say it. If he didn't have, he couldn't say, obviously. But
if he's blind.
Oh, if he's blind, same thing. Okay, so you can still say, so fine, he can't point to the matzah maybe, but he can still speak about the purpose for which we're eating Pesach, for which we're eating matzah and maror, and for which we should be eating the Pesach. Yeah. Okay. Mm-hmm. Everyone.
Okay.